Yeah, I think the biggest thing, you know, for any brand out there is to grow.
Yeah.
And I think for Titleist, Titleist is tour validated. Titleist started as a golf ball company.
Yeah.
And has grown to be number one in everything.
Well, awesome. Rudy, Matt from Titleist and FootJoy, thank you so much for joining us. We are so honored to have you on this morning. We had some casual chats before we formally started this morning. So I hope that this is going to be a huge benefit for everybody. Just to understand, one of the things in golf, Rudy, that gets one of the best tractions is what they call behind the scenes. Amateurs, you know, which is 99% of the people that bring the economy into golf, they love behind the scenes. They also, you know, you teeing off with the Titleist driver or an iron or a wedge or clothes, whatever it might be this afternoon. Why did you buy that? Now, obviously, I can no doubt that the brand played a massive position in wanting to know more about the brand and whether there's a fit for me. But today I'd like to know a little bit more about Titleist, what their position as a brand is, what they do for golf, because I don't think a lot of people understand.
Yeah.
And why South Africa, you know, why they enjoy being in South Africa and what they see in South African golf. Yeah. So that tomorrow morning when you tee off with your bag, you can look at it completely differently.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And I always say that if you know where your butter comes from and you open up the fridge and you know how they make the butter, where it comes from, the people that process it, next time you open up the fridge and you spread that butter, it's a completely different experience.
Butter, yeah.
And that's what we try and do here. Sorry to relate that to a food product, but the brand, awesome. There's people behind every brand.
Yeah.
So yes, it's a massive global brand with positions right around the world. But it also serves a particular community in South Africa, and Titleist adapts, you know, at wherever they go. So welcome to the show, Arthur.
Thank you so much.
Thank you once again for also being here, my co-host and journey with the Human Golf Show. Rudy, so welcome. That will be enough out of my mouth from here on. Rudy, it's over to you. Tell us a little bit your story, your position there, and just a little bit about your passion for Titleist or for golf.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks, and thank you for having me, guys. I appreciate it. I'm the leadership fitting technician for Titleist for South Africa. So in a nutshell, what that means is I fit and build all the golf clubs that you see on tour in South Africa. So if the guy's got a brand new Titleist bag with new Titleist clubs in there, that would have been me. So I would have fitted and built those.
So do you focus just on the tour, not the, and what about PGA professionals that are sponsored? Is that a separate fitting?
That's a separate fitting. Okay. So that's done with Andrew Plint.
Okay.
He's based at Bryanston, our new fitting center there.
Beautiful fitting center.
Beautiful fitting center.
Unreal, world class.
World class. And what's so amazing, if you look at that entire center that was built, when you walk into Titleist, it feels Titleist.
It's crazy. Yeah.
It's crazy, huh? Yeah.
It's just world
clean.
World class.
And really what's amazing to me, it's what I call brand touch points. Whenever I touch, I've got a Titleist bag that I must have bought 7 years ago.
Yes.
I'm telling you now, I clean that bag. You would think I bought that bag last week.
Yeah.
And that's the brand touch points. When you touch a club of yours, when you walk into your National Fitment Center at Bryanston, everything is just exuberant quality.
Well, that just shows the quality of your bag.
For sure.
Exactly, so
how did you become and how did you get to this place?
So we can go all the way back to where I started playing golf. So I think like most of us, we all played golf as kids with a little plastic golf club. And then at school, I did 7 sports.
Which school did you go to?
Primary school was Laerskool Akasha.
Yeah.
And high school was Hoërskool Pretoria Noord.
Okay.
So small schools, not big. And so I did 7 sports at school. I excelled in all of them except one. And that was golf.
Okay.
That's
life,
you know,
normally does.
Yeah. And I loved golf the most, but where I grew up at Akasha Golf Club, where that was my home club, back then juniors weren't allowed to play this and that. And I didn't have a dad at home, so I didn't have someone to take me to golf on a Saturday or Sunday. So how it worked out is I played golf in high school for the school team, and I was number one in the team. from standard 7, and I was an 8 handicap, but didn't play any golf except one or two lessons here and there, but then play for the school. And then after school, the only sport that I really, you know, excelled in as in a partier. I was a partier in softball. So, yeah, I was a good batsman.
In softball?
Softball, yes.
I didn't even know that was in South Africa.
Yeah.
What is softball like?
It's baseball, but with a big
baseball
ball.
With a big ball.
Yeah.
Yeah. So obviously, in America, it's massive.
You call yourself a batsman in softball.
Yeah, I was a batsman because I was in the field. I was either a catcher, which was at the back, or a center outfield because I was quite quick and I had an arm to throw it in. So, and then also, it was easy to get a batsman into a bigger team if he was a really good batsman, but he didn't take up one of the particular positions on the field. So if I could play anywhere, they could put me into the field because I could play anywhere, but I was a good batsman.
So in cricket, you would call that an all-rounder.
An all-rounder, yeah. So, played for the SA team. And then after school, I kind of didn't really know what I wanted to become, but I decided I'll go and do a coaching officiating degree at TUT, where I was part of the golf academy there. And the golf academy, you know, not everything worked out, so I had to stop. And I went to go study the PGA diploma through the PGA and then became an appy at first Golf USA. I don't know if Golf USA is still around.
Yeah.
And then Rustenburg Golf Club and then back to Akasha, back to my roots, back to Akasha Golf Club for a couple of months. And then my big break came in where I, Andrew Gunn from the PGA back then phoned me and he said, there's a position open at Copperleaf. Back then, I didn't know it was two positions for apprentices. And I don't know how many guys, I think there was more than maybe 20 guys who actually tried to get in. And lo and behold, me and John Geiser, who later became the golf director, got the two positions of apprentices at, back then it was still the Owls Club, Gardner Ross. And then it became the Owls Club at Copperleaf. And yeah, I worked there for the best part of 7 years. And enjoyed it all the way. But back then, me and John didn't even know where Copperleaf was going. That it was going to be Copperleaf.
Mm.
And it was very good. I worked in the shop for maybe 4.5 years and then moved out to the driving range where I worked with John Dixon. What a coach.
One congrats on that note. Congrats for winning the PGA Professional of the Year.
Yes, yeah. Wimpy. I call him Wimpy. What a machine. worked with John and I learned a hell of a lot from John Dixon there. And I did my own little thing there. And then from there, Cool Clubs, moved from Copperleaf to Cool Clubs. I was was at Cool Clubs for about a year and a half.
You worked with Billy?
With Billy Kirkbride and Greg Smith.
Yeah, Greg Smith, yeah.
And I learned a lot. I learned a lot about different shafts. At Copperleaf, I did the commercial fittings for a couple of different brands at that time, starting with Titleist, Callaway, Mizuno, Ping, Striction, and did that. And then kind of just before I moved to Cool Clubs, I was the main guy for Titleist commercial fittings.
Okay.
So I did about, it was quite interesting. And I think me and Arthur spoke about that in the last 2 or 3 months, we did almost R1 million through the shop in sales for Titleist. Back then, I mean, that was a lot of money. But back then, it was interesting how when if you put a little bit from Titleist side, put a little bit into one guy and fill up his slots every day, how one shop could benefit from that. And I think it's quite interesting how it worked out. I think at the moment Andrew Plint, when he fitted at Joburg Country Club, how that also helped Joburg Country Club shop because he was fully booked there.
Yeah.
So pretty interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, and that turnover that you push towards that shop also leads to other things, you know, rounds of golf, exactly. Maybe some training sessions, food, cool drinks. So it's an economy that you build towards that.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. Yeah, and then from cool clubs, learned a lot there. And then when the position that I'm in now opened up, I saw that on the PGA website and I thought, well, let me put my hand in the hat there. And yeah, very good and very blessed to be in my position. Yeah.
And how long have you been there now?
So it was 20, it's going on 4 years now. Yeah.
And what does it look like in a day in the life of Rudy? Because people are really love behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And like I said to you just before the show started, there's so many people that's picking up a driving range, picking up a Pro V this morning, you know. Mm. I laughed, all the memes that also goes into Pro V. So it just shows you how the brand is. You know those ones that says just before it hits the water, it makes like, it does like a funny scream or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Or when there's a water hole, you're like, Pro V's going back into the bag.
Yeah.
And I always laugh at those memes. So, you know, today I've got a Titleist bag, you've got Titleist balls, you glove, you know, the cloth, for joy, whatever it might be.
Mm.
Give people a little bit of insight into what goes on in day life and Rudy, and also why Titleist is the brand position that they are in South Africa from your perspective.
Yes. So a little more about me. Every morning, got two kids. So what gets me up in the morning is I make breakfast and I have breakfast with the kids. When you're on tour and you travel around, it's tough.
Yeah.
So I make a point of it that I make breakfast. So we eat oats every morning and I have coffee, you know, with the kids. And, I think that's special. I think that's the time you have, you know, we only here once. You know, make the most of it.
Yeah.
So from there, going to the office, I love going to the office in a sense where I think that's the Titleist office. You guys have been there. It's a happy place. We just revamped the whole warehouse for the leadership part. And it's our little happy place. And we try and, you know, make it better as we go. But for me, I'm in the business of helping people, helping players. I wanted to be a tour professional myself. And, you know, just wasn't, you know, good enough. From there, I think everything happens for a reason and I want to help guys. So when I get there, I want to help. And I think for me to be able to help a Tristan Strydom who lost his card in his rookie year, help the guy walk a road with him. And he's now, you know, he's playing in Europe. He's got a couple of invites now. You know, we might only see him for the big ones in South Africa next. Helping a guy like that who's been down the slumps, you know, get back onto the horse, win the Q school, win the tour champs, and then go and play in Europe. That's what we do. That's what we are here for. And I think, you know, for me and Len, we've got a goal. And we set the goal the first year that I got there is we said, okay, for us to grow, for us to get better, we need to get more guys from here onto the bigger tours. Mm-hmm. So if you look at what, you know, if you call a couple of names up, you can go Garrick Hugo, Dani van Tonder. And if you look at those guys are the guys who hold the flag out there. They move the needle. So, you know, the better we do here, the better it reflects out there. So that's hence our third head, Stuart Brown, who's our administrator for leadership. And he's kind of the guy behind the scenes. So he'll be the guy at the office every day. And looking at that, that frees me up a little to actually get to tournaments, get to fittings, and actually getting happier because then I can help more players because I can actually be out there hands on. So yeah, that's basically that.
Well, fitting is a complicated thing, and Arthur and I speak about it all the time. Where people have this perceived idea fitting comes with cost, and it's this only really reserved for when you have the cash. Where it's just
or
not
for
the
pros.
Cash. Or for pros.
Yes.
You know, that's the idea. But it's changed over time. And there's, you know, brands like TrueFit, which I know is a partner of your guys as well in selling. They grow that part where, hold on, it's actually a great thing to go in, do it fit for purpose. Because the swing is such a complicated thing.
Yes.
Everybody's swing is different. No matter what coaching process you go through.
Yeah.
You know, when I speak to coaches, they always say you can follow the exact same program with 10 people. They're all going to have a different angle of their swing and small little interpretations.
No, it's the same. Yeah.
So when it comes to a pro, we completely obviously understand, you know, when it makes a lot more sense. But is there a difference in fitting a pro versus fitting an amateur?
I would say the biggest difference between fitting a pro and an amateur is the consistency of hits.
Okay.
So Arthur, who fits a lot of different players, he fits a lot of tour pros as well.
As well.
If you look at that, the difference is literally a pro hits three or four shots in a row that are almost exactly the same, depending on the amateur and his handicap, the consistency of hits. I think that's the biggest difference. From there, if you look at equipment, the shafts are suited in flex and the heads suited in loft and different heads for the specific player. So if you look at Titleist, and I think Titleist has come a long way in fitting.
Definitely, yeah.
And if you look at it.
Why do you say that? What do you mean? Just explain to the average man. Because I would think that you would have set sort of the tone.
Yes.
What do you mean you've come a long way?
So I think from the start, if you look at, you know, where I started with Titleist fittings when I was at Golf USA back in 2007, 2008, Titleist, the driver that just came out then was the 907 D1 and D2. And you had one shaft option in a 10-degree head with one shaft option. Da, 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 da. So they've come a long way in a sense where they are the leader in fitting at the moment.
Yeah.
Different shafts, different
options,
in loft and all of that. So if you look at, and it's not brand bashing. It's you know, I work for the best company in the world in golf. But if you look at the different amount of options in Titleist, Titleist is leading that side.
Yeah.
And we spoke about it, me and Arthur, plenty of times. Is for the first time ever, I can build a driver that doesn't spin enough for anyone in the world.
Okay.
Okay. When we had the 917 driver, I played an 8.5-degree driver, lofted down with a heavy Tour X tipped 70-gram Diamana shaft to try and get the ball flight down. I'm going the other way now, where the ball hasn't changed that much, but the rest of the equipment has changed that much that I'm lofting up. I'm playing a lighter weight shaft, a shaft that launches higher, because I'm at a point where I'm trying to spin the ball more than 2,000, where back then
I was trying to
get it below 3,000.
And is that because you want to create more shaping or have better control over that?
So before, it was just trying to get the spin down.
Okay.
Now it's trying to make the spin or to get the spin high enough.
Yeah.
And I think back then it was, you know, all of the brands were trying to get the spin down. Now, you know, and we speak about it a lot, is you need in a driver need to create the biggest rainbow. If my rainbow is bigger than your rainbow, the ball's going further. So I need to launch it as high as I can, and I need to spin it as low as I can with the most amount of ball speed behind the ball. So if I can create that, then I create the longest driving distance.
Okay.
So looking at that, the average loft on tour is roughly 10.5 degrees.
Oh, that's the average.
In the
world.
I would
have thought it was 9.
That is so flawed because I see it a lot of the times, which was actually yesterday. Excuse me. And I was fitting a customer who was a decent golfer, single figure, had a lot of club head speed. And I actually fitted him into a 10.5 degree. And he looked at me funny, like, are you telling me I'm cuck?
Yeah.
That's exactly.
Everyone has the perception of I need a 9 degree or 8.5 because I'm good.
Yeah.
But loft is your friend at the end of the day.
Because
I always say to my customers, if you want to hit the ball straight and I give you a pitching wedge or 3-iron, which one are you going to hit? Obviously the pitching wedge, because loft is your friend.
Loft helps you, Loft says
it narrows your dispersion. It's easier to hit. It gets the ball in the air. You don't need to try pick it up in the air.
Exactly.
And manipulate it. Let the club do the work. Let the shaft control the ball flight and the spin.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. And also going back to the previous thing with Titleist, and correct me if I'm wrong, like 10, 15 years ago, Titleist was known as a players club.
Yes.
They didn't have the option for a 24 handicap type of golf club.
Yes.
You know, they were known as a players club, and they had their blades and semi-blades. Very small sweet spots.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a leading tour club.
Yeah.
And
it
over
was
the
a low
year,
handicap golf club. Yeah.
Correct. So they had that stigma about them. And over this period, they've actually changed it up, and now they've got suitable clubs for everyone.
Yeah.
And really, do you know why that change was
so
brought
I think,
in?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, you know, for any brand out there is to grow.
Yeah.
And I think for Titleist, Titleist is tour validated. Titleist started as a golf ball company.
Yeah.
Has grown to be number one in everything. And Titleist as a golf ball validated on tour. They at the moment, and we joke about it, but there are 16 different golf balls on the South African tour. Titleist golf balls.
16?
Yes.
No.
So we can list them and go through them, but if you, it's a joke in a sense where, why? So on tour, everyone's a little different.
Yeah.
Okay. Just like your amateurs. But not everyone wants to play a white golf ball. So some guys want to play a yellow ball. So
I prefer yellow.
Five years ago, you had only one yellow golf ball on tour. And it was on a Titleist. Now you have four different Titleist golf balls that come in yellow. And that's the 21 V1, the current one, the 21X, the current ball, and then the 19 V1 and the 19X, all in yellow. So that's four different golf balls. So if you look at those four different golf balls, you look at the four of those golf balls in white, and then you get the dash ball, the lowest spinning X.
Yeah.
Then you have the left dot, which is the lowest spinning V1. Then you have a star, which is a highest spinning V1. And then you have the 17 ball, which is the V1 and the X that some players still play, like Martin Rowe. Martin Rowe still plays the 17 V1. And if you look at that, there's so much options, so many options out there.
It's just almost a little bit overwhelming.
Just to confirm something, the 17, 19, and 21 is obviously the year date.
It was produced. Now, so okay. if you look at it from a tour side where it's tour validated, if you have that many options on tour, how many options do you have for the amateur?
Yeah.
So amateurs being, if you look at the driver heads, there's a TSR from a 2 to a 4, and then soon there'll be a TSR 1. But they cater for everyone. You have shafts from Ladies Flex all the way to Tour X. And then you have lofts in driver from 8 to 12. So you could fit anyone. And that's just talking about driver. If you look at the irons, you could fit anyone into the irons because of the array of shafts and the array of heads. So I think from a Titleist standpoint, from where Titleist started, when I was a fitter, when I started doing fittings to where we are now, I can build a golf club for anyone.
I just want to pause on just two things there. So all the balls that you mentioned, what's the number one ball being played on tour and amateurs for Titleist in South Africa?
Sure.
Yeah.
It's a tough question. Is it tough questions for the tour or tough questions for amateurs?
So I think amateurs, and we talk about
easier.
This as well. No. So amateurs, if you ask anyone out there what they play, is they play Titleist.
Yeah.
Okay. The reason why is they want to play Titleist. Okay, not everyone plays Titleist.
It's an aspirational brand.
So because it's tour validated and because the best players in the world use Titleist, everyone wants to say they use Titleist. Okay, so
unless there's water on the hole.
On the hole. then they want to play whatever. But
sorry, really.
But looking at that, interesting, and we'll touch a little on ball count. So ball count in South Africa on a weekly basis on the Sunshine Tour is roughly 82%.
Okay.
For Titleist.
Holy moly, that's a lot.
So then you get the other brands who make up the 18%. So looking at that, if you're not playing a Titleist, why not? Okay, so that's kind of one point. If you look at amateurs and at the amateur championship, that was played earlier this year, the ball count there was 86% Titleist. So that's the best amateurs in the world. They can play anything, and they decide to play Titleist. So if you look at that from a golf ball company, that's where you want to be.
Yeah.
And it's taken, you know, hard work, but it's being consistent.
Yeah.
Your
product has to be the best.
It has to be the best.
You can't sell or market it to become to that. Yeah. Because even if you get it to that particular point, so let's say you guys have the best marketing campaigns in the world.
Mm.
If the ball's not going to do what the ball needs to do, or the clubs and the wedges are not going to perform the way that you guys have sold it, you're going to lose traction anyway.
Then you lose it anyway.
So you've maintained that position because your product is bloody good.
So back to the count and to the golf ball. So in amateurs, if you look at the amount of golf balls that amateurs can buy in the Titleist range, it's actually because if you look at what's played on tour, it's actually more variety because you've got a couple, I would say, entry-level balls in price range that you cannot get on tour. But the reason because of that, the reason for that is the performance aspect, because a tour professional needs the performance. So they all performance golf balls, and the amateur needs a price point.
Yeah.
So if you look at, the amateurs out there, and what they have is they have a bigger variety of golf balls, even though there is so many golf balls on tour for Titleist, the variety is bigger for the amateur.
You know, for an amateur golfer, and at TrueFit we do a ball fitting. I know Rudy does a ball fitting as well.
We'll talk about that
now. We'll talk about that now. Is the amateurs actually need a ball fitting
more than clubs.
Because of the strike that amateurs create, I mean, they're not consistent as tour pros. They need to know what their spin rate is doing and choose the correct ball for that purpose.
Yeah.
You know, if you misstrike it or hit it a bit heely or a little bit thin, it's going to spin more. So you need to almost play for the miss to make yourself a bit more consistent, to control that spin rate, to make you a bit more consistent, hit it a bit straighter, have that more consistent distance, because obviously the spin rate will give you that consistent distance over time. So it's actually scary that guys don't even do that because it's so crucial for that player. Listen, you're not going to, it's not like these guys are going to make money, but everyone wants to go out to the golf course, play good golf, play to the best of their ability, enjoy it. And that little white golf ball or yellow golf ball makes a huge difference in an amateur's game.
Yeah.
But that's very important that that's noted on this conversation that, you know, being in the golf industry, it's even something you hear the least of.
Yeah.
So never mind being in the general golfer, it's almost non-existent.
Yeah.
I know that, you know, what you just said there makes such sense in a practical perspective, because obviously the tour player plays for a 99.9 percentile of strike rate, where we are playing at a strike rate of 60, 70, whatever that might be, depending on your handicap and etc. So let the ball, just like a club face, giving you a little bit more leeway, or what do you call it normally?
Yeah, forgiveness.
Same so for the ball, so that you play more for the average strike rate versus a performance strike rate from a professional. And even the amateur golfers, they far more, the percentages must be far more higher than, let's say, just a general golfer like me, you know, in the field.
Yeah. So looking at golf ball fitting, and Arthur would have done a couple, you know, for especially his better player, a golf ball, looking at how important the golf ball is that's the only piece of equipment you use for every single shot.
Fair enough.
Okay, so didn't think about it that way. So, your golf ball and your shoes.
Yes.
Okay. So 90% of golfers use either the wrong shoe or the wrong golf ball. That's how bad it is.
Even bringing shoe into that.
Shoe is important.
So you walk, I mean, if you look at tour professionals, and we deal with it a lot. I'm on the equipment side, but we deal with a lot of pros who order the wrong shoe in the wrong size. We've got one good amateur at the moment who's had the wrong shoe, and he's top five amateur in the country at the moment. And he's played the wrong shoe because he plays IPT, and then he plays Golf RSA, and all of them are FootJoy shoes, but they weren't fitted specifically for him. And because he swings it so hard, he actually got injured. So he's worked with a foot specialist and with Greg De Villiers, our FootJoy rep, to get the right golf shoe. It's interesting how we've worked through a couple of golf shoes, how his golf game from being at a all-time high went to an all-time low because of his injury, and then he had to work a couple of months through the injury to get the new golf shoe where he's now swinging it faster than he did when he was at his all-time high, playing in just another FootJoy golf shoe.
Yeah,
and let's break it down a little bit just for the listeners. So with the golf shoe, you get a medium fit, okay, talking about size and depth, then you get a wide and you get an extra wide. And golf shoes that get imported into the country, each style has a different size.
Yeah.
You know, they obviously cater for everyone.
It's amazing across all brands.
Correct.
Yeah. You think you're a 9 year, you're not a 9 there, you're 9.5 or whatever it
correct.
Might be.
Yeah, so for me, I've always played 9 for my whole life, okay, or since I was 18, 19.
Yeah.
And I actually did a shoe fitting the other day, and I don't know why I've done it now, and I'm actually an 8.5.
Yeah.
And I'm a medium, and I used to wear wider shoes.
Yeah.
But now, going back to the shoe, if you've got a wide shoe and you've got a very thin foot, there's movement in your movement.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're losing stability. Think about it when you're swinging at a fast club head speed.
Yeah.
Your feet are going to be moving.
Yeah. Yeah.
You need stability from the down up. So you always use the ground in the golf swing.
Yeah.
So the shoe fitting is crucial.
Crucial. Yeah.
To do, and it's a small percentage of performance, but that consistency factor is like, in the game.
So what you guys are saying is that just think about this a while back. Golf shoes was perceived as the most uncomfortable thing you can wear.
Yeah. Back in the day.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
Honestly, it wasn't made for. I mean, it was like, you know,
heavy.
And it annoyed me a little bit because it almost distracted from the game.
Yeah.
You knew that when you're going to put that shoes on and you're going
to
get
cramps
when you walk onto that shoe.
So interesting, back to the shoe, and then I want to finish the ball conversation.
Yeah, me too.
So the shoe, like I wear a size UK 7 extra wide. Okay. So FootJoy
makes. So he's got basically hobbit feet.
Yeah.
So very short and wide.
Okay.
So
I'm also wide.
My hands look. My feet look like hands like that.
Okay.
They're as long as they want.
Okay.
So, they make a narrow shoe.
Yeah.
Okay. Then they make a medium shoe.
Yes.
They make a wide shoe and they make an extra wide shoe.
Yes.
So in some of the shoes, you get them in a narrow, medium, and wide, and then in some of the shoes, you get them in a medium, wide, and extra wide. So, and that's within the whole range of shoes, okay? So, interesting enough, I used to play when I had a little stint where I tried to play two, and luckily it stopped quickly. I played a UK wide 8, okay? So now I'm a full size shorter, but a size wider. And I can honestly tell you, it's interesting how when your golf shoe or your working shoe is bad for you, you have lower back issues and the whole thing. So because I wear the right size now, I walk about 15,000 steps a day. In the right shoe,
it's a pleasure.
Lower back gone. I mean, there's no more pain. But it's amazing how, and I'm just the guy who walks around.
Yeah.
So if you look at a guy like Jaco Prinsloo, who is one of the guys with bigger feet, he's a slightly heavier guy, and if his golf shoes aren't perfect, number one, they hurt him, but they don't support him. A guy like Louis Albertzer, we gave him 15 meters on his driver just by getting him into the right golf shoe.
No way.
So he was the wrong size and the wrong golf shoe, the wrong type of golf shoe. So it was a great shoe, but not for him.
People actually don't fathom.
They don't see how. And a guy like Louis Albertzer, I mean, he's in the top 3 or top 5 of driving distance. So you give that guy another 15 meters because his shoes. I mean, that's amazing.
It's amazing, but it's so important, Rudy. Now that it's not necessarily. This is not the type of information that gets shared with you at store level.
No ways. No
one knows. But it's also not important. That's why I always say consumers have the power in their hands. Mm. If this gives you a moment where you, Oh my word, I didn't know that. Now you can go back to wherever you buy your stuff from and say, I need to specifically make sure this shoe is fitted for purpose.
Yes, exactly.
And shoes are also expensive.
I mean, it is massive.
Yeah. Everything is expensive in life right now, but why buy the wrong shoe
if you
spend $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, however much it costs, and you use it all the time, and it's not right for you.
Exactly.
Arthur, how many shoes do you have in your cupboard, that you've bought, but they're too uncomfortable to wear daily, and they just sit there?
Yeah.
My philosophy is that, and especially for me, like, I just want to buy a shoe that I feel comfortable in. Mm. Yeah. The style is really secondary for me now. When I was younger, it's like my feet didn't care.
Yes.
Now, as I get older, it's almost like my feet are saying, listen, this great to have the style. That's why I'm a guy that buys black and dark blue, you know, just easy, simple stuff. But the shoe fit
is number one.
Yeah,
you have a lack of wedding to go to, dance all night, wake up the next day and you can't
move
because it's like square toe, narrow, and
100%. And I leather. Still don't. Yeah, and really, they make shoes, you know, in general for a general foot.
Correct.
Yeah. But the moment you go a bit more wider, you are in deep nonsense.
Yeah.
And then some brands have 9.5. Some brands have no. Not
half sizes, yeah.
So you have to almost like squeeze yourself in, or you have to have a little piece at the front to give you a little bit of space. Yeah,
exactly. And I think, you know, different shoes are fitted differently, like running shoes, a wedding shoe, a golf shoe. They should all fit different because they've got different purposes. So interesting enough, if you look at a guy like Malcolm Mitchell.
Yeah.
Malcolm Mitchell... His one foot is longer than the other, and the one is wider than the other. So he's got two different shoes. Okay, so his one shoe, his left foot, is a different size to his right foot. But we ordered his shoes that way. Again, he played his whole life. He's a great player. Played his whole life with the wrong size shoe in both feet, so that they could kind of fit in
between,
both.
And it does the
and
job.
And they this one's wrong and this one's wrong, but they both okay-ish. But I have to kind of wear shoes, so I'll. And then go. So he's got two different size shoes, and it's amazing how his game in the last year, you know, has gone like this because of different shoes. When he wears this pair of shoes, he's playing well. And when he kind of wears that shoe, so that's what we're working with on our side. And interesting enough, you know, and we'll talk about just after the golf ball, we'll talk about stats and how that forms part of a fitting before I even start. His stats in golf shoe, you use the wrong golf shoe, you're out. And Louis Alberta will tell you the same. When he used the wrong golf shoe and you're out, I mean, if you don't feel good about your shoes, how do you swing it?
I completely agree. So even as an amateur, we can relate to that.
Exactly.
And I mean not amateur, professional amateur or going to the general golfer.
Yeah, exactly.
It's one of the biggest discussion points. It is. If you think about how many times in a golf game people discuss, oh, this is the most comfortable shoes you will ever wear. And then everybody's like, where did you get it? And I've seen it before. Two weeks later, that guy's bought those shoes because that guy said to him, this is the most comfortable thing ever.
Some guys play golf only in golf carts.
Yeah.
Because they haven't found the golf shoe that they could actually walk 18 holes with.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's guys who have maybe played 30 years of golf.
Yeah.
But he still hasn't found the right golf shoe to walk 18 holes.
And really, sorry, I don't want to keep because you guys are the specialists here. But you know what I find is when you're walking on flat, it's one thing. But it's when you start walking upwards, downwards,
sideways.
Or
sideways.
Towards the bunker or around the green when it really becomes hurtful to walk with those shoes.
Exactly.
And that's when that fitting really comes into play.
Can,
not on
you
the
can
straight line.
Your ankle.
Exactly.
Like walking around 100%. The bunker.
I've seen
you
it.
Don't have the right
you have
size.
It all the time. It happens all the time.
Yeah. So back to the golf ball. Okay, so Arthur touched on it quickly, but it's the only piece of equipment you use for every single shot. So the Titleist philosophy is not from the driver to the green.
Yeah.
So it's from the green back to the tee.
Yes.
So we fit the golf ball. So if I had to start the golf ball fitting, I started on the putting green.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The reason is the X versus the V. The V1X versus the V1, the feel is different.
Mm.
Okay. Now, every putter is different. So Big Pompey's and Joe Soap will have a different putter, and the insert will be different or no insert. And if you like the feel of your golf ball when you putt, it's a confidence thing. You think you can get it to the hole, or you just like it. If you dislike it, doesn't matter how nicely it works on the driver. If you don't like it and you dislike it, and you have a 50-foot putt and you don't think you can get it there, then the 300-meter drive did not help you, because you're not making that putt. You're most probably making a 3-putt.
Yeah.
Okay. So we start from the green back to the tee.
That just blows my mind. I've never thought about it that way.
So green, around the greens, from chipping and wedges, pitching, irons, driver.
And then you go that way.
It's amazing. Every single person, if I have to ask this 1,000 times today, it would be, well, you start on the driver.
Yeah. No, so you can fit. I can, if you look at a guy like Louis Alberta again, because we all know him, and we've all dealt with him, you know, in different aspects. He's tried the Pro V1, and for him, the Pro V1 on the irons kind of fall out the sky, because he doesn't spin them enough. And that's when he was playing a shaft that actually didn't suit him, which was the Project LZ 7.0. It was nice and heavy, and he thought, well, heavy is nice for me, and it kind of keeps it down. But it was launching and spinning too high, and he was playing the V1 to kind of compensate for that. And then, you know, after testing, we found that, you know what, the X ball fits Louis better. Now, I can build any driver for any player in the world playing the Titleist golf ball that spins the most and still have it spin too low to be optimized.
Okay.
That's how wide the spectrum is.
Mm. Yeah.
So don't fit your golf.
That's how customizable it is.
Yeah. So you don't fit your driver to fit to your favorite ball. It's a combination. So you fit your ball first. Forget about everything else. Fit your ball first, and then you fit the rest of the bag.
Okay.
So if you look at start at putter, then chipping. So a simple thing, I like to chip and see the ball come out a little lower and check. So the new Pro V1 to me was, I mean, it blew my mind. I love how it feels when I putt, and then when I chip, it allows me to hit a low chip that checks up. I love that. A guy like Merrick Bremner, who we all know as well, he likes to throw the ball all the way to the flag.
And bring it back. Yeah.
Merrick, Donny van Tonder, they all like to fly it all the way to the hole and pitch it in and make it stop right there or come back.
And they're obviously using the 1X.
They're using the 1X. Yeah. Okay. So that's chipping. Okay. Looking at Merrick actually can do that with the new Pro V1. You can actually hit it high enough, but it actually stops quick enough. Moving on to the next, if you're hitting pitch shots, 70 to about 40 meters, I like to hit the low shot. So I like the Pro V1 again there. The X dash, even though it spins low enough for me, it just comes out in a window that's too high. So for me, I hit the ball and I don't like to see that. But it doesn't even fly the correct distance for me, because if it doesn't go through the correct window. So looking at that, that's just from 70 meters back. I haven't even hit a full wedge yet, and I don't like any of the X's. So by that point, if you started a ball fitting, by that point you've already taken out 8 of the 16 golf balls on tour.
Yeah.
And then you move into the irons. Looking at the irons, the difference between the V1 and the V1X on irons is, on paper, the one's supposed to launch higher and spin higher. Some players, like Tegan Gachet, launches and spins the V1X lower than the V1.
Okay.
In the irons. So what it is on paper and what it actually performs out there is different. And it's because of how he actually strikes the golf ball. So
dynamic loft, probably a factor.
Yeah, exactly. So it's interesting how the golf ball on paper is not exactly for everyone what it is out there when you actually test. So looking at that, then you move into the fairway and to the driver. And like I said, I've got guys like JP Strydom, who plays a TSI 3 11 degree driver. And he plays the V1 golf ball, and that suits his game the whole way through. If you look at that, Louis Alberta, he plays the X ball, but he plays an 8-degree driver head.
And if I'm not mistaken, it's 44 inches long.
So his is 43 inches long.
43. Yeah. That's a, just to let that's you know, a that's three a 3-wood length shaft in a driver.
Yeah.
And he's still what he's considered long.
He's long.
He's very long. Yeah. I've got his data. Yeah. He's long.
Yeah.
So just shows you the versatility.
Yeah. So your golf ball needs to suit everything in your game. So it needs to suit your putting, chipping, if it's a flop shot or a bump and run, then your pitching, then iron shots into the wind, with the wind, a fairway wood off the deck, fairway wood off the tee, hybrid into a green, a fairway wood into a green, fairway wood off the tee to try and hit it into the wind. Driver, some guys hit the driver off the tee as well as off the deck. So your golf ball needs to be so good in all aspects.
That's where fitting comes into place. That's where fitting comes in. To get, tick all those boxes.
Yeah.
So just on that, which it's a big question in golf always. So once I've got the right ball, how many rounds roughly? Now I understand you might chip the ball, you know, by a particular wedge shot or the lie of the ball that was against the stone. So there might be a chip on the ball. But on average, how long is a ball supposed to last? One, a professional, and two, on average, an amateur. Without considering, you know, hitting the water and chipping the ball or damaging the ball. I'm just saying a general golf day or a general golf play.
So, interesting. it doesn't last amateurs as long as pros, because pros lose less golf balls. So that's the starting point.
Okay, fair enough.
So, but then from there we go professionals. Some professionals change the ball every couple of holes.
Three, four holes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
is there technical reasons for that?
So it could be both ways. So some guys use some of the older golf balls, like the 17-1 and 17X. Those golf balls are not as durable as the new golf ball.
Got it.
Okay. So they don't last as long.
Got it.
So the new golf ball, 21V, 21X, is the most durable of all the Pro Vs made.
But when does a pro know? What about the ball tells him?
Well, you so can see it could, if there's a scuff mark on it.
Okay, so that's a
sometimes
on a scuff
when you generate a high clubhead speed with a wedge, for
with
example,
wedge,
it could scuff.
Yeah.
You could be lying against a stone.
Mm. You could hit a tree on the tee from the tee.
Or so, hit a piece of concrete, cart path,
or whatever.
But let's say he doesn't do any of that, and he just hits the ball in the driving range today, and I keep picking that ball up and giving it back to you.
Yeah. How many shots?
How many shots?
So a guy like Brooklyn Bailey,
an
American player playing on the Sunshine Tour now, Jean Hugo was telling me last week that he played 37 holes with one golf ball at the previous tournament. And Jean was like, why are you doing that? Like, and it's not even a brand new golf ball. It looks like a golf ball that he's used before. So he's got a thing where he doesn't care what it looks like. He just plays a golf ball. And then John Hugo, he's one of the guys who's been, you know, a little longer on tour, and he's not heavy on golf balls, but he changes his golf ball every couple of holes if there's a scuff mark or whatever, but he's not going to play one full 18 holes with one golf ball. There's no way.
And it's there's so, some guys are superstitious, and I'm sure...
I was going to say the mind plays a big role in all that.
I'm sure a lot of people know this, but when Ernie makes a birdie, he gets rid of his ball.
Yeah, some guys do. And some guys...
It's done its job. It's made his birdie. It's done. Next ball on the next tee.
And then some guys, like I'm like that. If I start, you know, a bad, okay, because I play normally lower numbers, 1-4, but I would start the round with number ones if it's a brand new dozen. And if the number one doesn't work, you know, off the tee, I change it to a number two. Same golf ball, you know, same markings. I would change that just because of maybe number one's not the number today.
Yeah.
But that's a superstitious thing.
Yeah.
It's not I'm going to change golf ball because it's whatever. And then I think the golf balls, interesting enough, the durability from 2000, the first Pro V1, to the durability now, I think guys, you know, and the general public think that the golf ball is so expensive. Why is it so expensive? Well, we just spoke about how many checks it goes through. But if you had to hit that first Pro V1 and you hit it out the or you thinned it and you picked up the ball and it had a smiley and you had to play for money, would you hit that golf ball again?
No.
And then the new golf ball lasts a hell of a lot longer. So if you look at that, that's why golf balls are more expensive. And it's not just specifically Titleist. All golf balls are expensive. And Titleist, the golf ball versus what it was back then and to what it is now, is just so much more, it's more durable and it lasts longer. So your average amateur, if you're not losing that golf ball, it doesn't scuff as easily. So you actually get value for your money. You could play more. If you hit the fairway down the middle and you never hit a tree and you never hit it in the bunker, your golf ball, I mean, every oak will be his own judge, but you could play it for as long as you could keep it.
Keep it.
Because it wouldn't scuff as easily. Back in the day, the first Pro V1, I mean, I played
full
back then.
One full shot with a lob wedge
and it's gone. Yeah. One. I mean, some players, I mean, we've got plenty who have their own little practice bag. They played tournaments, you know, with this one golf ball like Jean Hugo or Louis Albert. So he played a couple of holes and then changed it. That practice ball goes, or it now becomes a practice ball, goes in his practice bag, and it's there for months.
They'll chip with it
and they'll chip with it because it's good. It's still good. But for him, it's just not a brand new golf ball anymore. So it's not going to play tour. It's not going to play a tournament. But it's still good enough to practice because of how durable the golf ball is now.
Why would somebody play? So obviously, I know, and I would. There's a mindset to it as well as to why would I want to play with the 2017 Pro V as an example. And on tour, what we see as well is that this one plays with a range that was maybe 2-3 years old, but he's got comfortability in that.
Yeah.
Why does that happen? And for me, I mean, I understand if you look at car manufacturers as an example, let's just talk specifically Toyota and Cruiser as an example. Yeah. Some people want the Cruiser, the 91 Cruiser or the 97 Cruiser because of a particular reason for that. So that, I suppose in golf, but why in golf in practicality would a pro want a 2017 versus a 2022?
So some guys don't change, you know, like the season change.
Yeah.
So some guys, you know, when the new golf ball is out, for most guys, because the golf ball is more durable, they'll change straight up.
Sure.
Okay. So that's one thing. Then the golf ball, and Arthur will know this as well, the new 21 V1 and V1X was designed with the driver head, the TSI.
Okay. So that's a synergy ball, between the two.
Exactly. So so as the golf clubs change, the golf ball changes
with the product.
Okay. But it's almost the other way around. It's as the golf ball changes, the golf equipment change to suit the golf equipment. So if you look at that, and if we throw it out there, a Titleist golf ball was designed to go with a Titleist driver. So a Titleist golf ball will not be perfectly married with another manufacturer's driver.
Okay.
So fitting.
Well, it's like a ecosystem of any good technology company where your products just catch each other easier, read each other easier, integrates easier.
Yeah.
If I'm a general golfer. Mm. I go pick up a Pro V this afternoon. I take my Titleist driver out. What is the difference between a Pro ball that's being played on the tour right now versus me going to pick it up at the retail stores this morning?
So looking at, and that's the thing for about Titleist is the golf ball that you buy off the shelf and the golf ball that gets given out on tour is the exact same golf ball. Okay. So if you look at a guy like Tiger and the golf ball that he uses.
But is that unique for Titleist?
I don't want to say that's 100% unique for Titleist because some of the brands have product that you can buy off the shelf.
Yeah.
But specifically Tiger, the golf ball that Tiger is using is not available to the public.
Correct.
Okay. So specifically, but if you look at that, like the AVX golf ball is a great golf ball and a lot of guys use it at the coast because it's low launch, low spin. It's not perfect for everyone. And it's definitely not perfect for everyone who uses it at the coast.
Okay.
Because it launches and spins a little too low for a lot of guys.
Yeah.
And a lot of players. But if you look at, and back to golf ball right there, Jean Hugo, being a guy who played the first Pro V and all the generations, got stuck onto one Pro V because he didn't want to move because he still liked what the golf ball was doing.
Yeah.
And even though he changed the driver, he kind of stuck with that golf ball because it worked around the green and so on. Looking at him now, we did a fitting about a year and a half ago where he tried to hit the low shot and we were getting ready for a tournament at the coast. And I said to Jean, Jean, you know, your ball flight, that low launch, low spin one, do you know how much you're losing in distance? And he said, no, I'm not losing. I'm not losing anything. I'm gaining. And I said to him, you're losing. And we looked at it. We were on the range into the wind in Joburg, in Pretoria, actually, into the wind. And we could see the ball pitch and where it pitched when he hit the low one. And then I said to him, just hit your stock shot. Don't try and hit it harder or just hit your stock one. There was 30 meters carry distance.
Gained
by hitting a stock shot into a two-club wind versus hitting this low one. So a lot of professionals and amateurs think that if you hit the low one, the wind's not going to catch it and it's not going to blow it away. The ball is so good now that you hit it straight through the wind. And the best drivers of the golf ball, I think, well, in my head, is Justin Thomas and Rory McIlroy. They both hit two different shapes. The one hits it left to right, the other hits it right to left. But they both hit a high ball flight, high launch, low spin.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them, even if it's into a three-club wind, hit a high ball flight. They don't hit a low one because they know, I'm losing. Yes, maybe I keep it on the fairway. But
if it's tight.
Yeah,
if it's
tight. But, that's because of technology and development of the ball where it moves against the wind far better than what it used
to. It's much stronger through the wind. That's it. Because of its...
Again, Rudy, really, I didn't even think about it. I mean, this Sunday, we played... Monday, we played Bryanston. Paul Marks and myself, we sat there and we felt like every shot was against the wind.
Yes.
We felt like... Okay, on this hole, it's blowing wonderfully with us. But when we get onto the tee, it felt like it just turned completely.
Yes.
But I adapted my stance and the position of my club or my driver to try and make sure I keep slightly lower as a sort of type of stinger. But I didn't think that the ball will do the work for me anyway.
Yeah. So you actually lose, even though you use the same golf ball that goes through the wind. If you lose the launch and spin, you lose the distance.
100%. Incredible moment, so, that again.
So that's again, launch angle and loft is your friend.
Yeah, again. So yeah, that's back.
But
to,
that's not traditionally. Yeah. That's used. Think about how many people are stuck in the opposite of what you both are saying right now.
Yeah, because you used to hit the golf ball. The golf ball used to with the driver.
Yeah,
used to launch low and kind of look like a Boeing.
Yes.
Okay, the new golf ball doesn't do that because it doesn't spin enough with the new head. So what actually happens to it? Now you hit it into the wind. And this is what I showed John Hugo, who's played, I mean, how long on tour? So when you hit that low one and it doesn't spin enough, the wind actually
dips it.
So the ball actually dips and nosedives.
And falls out of the sky.
Falls out the sky. And then you have no roll because the wind literally, it's like hitting a wall.
Yeah.
And then the wind literally kills everything that the golf ball's got and it goes down.
So it's not apexing and it's not getting to the maximum ball speed as well.
So what happens is, and it's interesting where some players like a Martin Rower, he and JP Strydom, they both hit a little down on it and they hit this little fade. So both of them have a low loft at impact, which is dynamic loft. And the moment you add loft, add ball speed.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. So for them.
Yeah.
Now, with Louis Alberta, who's kind of neutral through impact, he's got quite a low lofted head. Still hits a fade, and both those players, Martin and JP, hit a fade. But because he's a little neutral through impact, he doesn't need more loft.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and he plays a shaft that's low launch, low spin, where both JP and Martin and even Reese Enoch, all of them hit down on it, but they need a shaft to kick and they need more loft because otherwise they actually lose ball speed because they actually don't have enough loft at impact.
Mm.
That's why a lot of players on the world tour plays a driver that's higher lofted. Mm. If you look at it the other way, some players need low loft because they actually add too much loft.
Yeah.
So some impact. Guys hit it like 5 degrees on the up or six up. Degrees yeah. on the up.
Yeah.
Yes.
Basically, yeah. if you take a 9 degree, it's sitting at a 12 at impact, yeah. as an example.
I get yeah. you.
Then
I
it's too you. Much loft, and mm. then you actually lose ball speed.
Yeah.
So in some cases, adding loft actually makes it go further. So that's where John Hugo, where he's trying to hit that low one, he plays an 8 degree driver. Well, we've got him now on a 9 degree driver, lofted up to 9.75. When I gave it to him, he actually couldn't. He's like, but this looks like my driver. Because the new drivers are so good looking. And even when you add loft, they don't look left or right or wherever. He loves the look of it, even though it's got more loft. But he can see that when you hit the stock one, it goes further. But the moment you take loft away at impact for like John Hugo, he lost ball speed, he lost launch, and he lost spin. And are you hitting into a wind hurting? So if you're not optimal, it's going to hurt you more. So every percent that you off optimal, you get hurt. So if you off with ball speed, launch, and spin, you're in trouble. So if you just hit your stock shot, and yes, maybe the wind pushes it 10 meters right, then you aim for the 10 meters, but you're going to gain 30 meters on that little one that you thought was going to go, and it actually hurts you more.
And does Titleist position and equip the people on the ground that fits the general golfer? Yeah. Because obviously your economy
yes.
is in the general golfer.
Yes.
Am I right in saying yeah. that? Because a lot of these guys are sponsored. Mm. That what they do for us is they drive the general public towards your clubs because yes. based on their performance and stuff. Mm. Now that you know everybody listening to Rudy, to you this morning, they now understand, I mean, you know, what goes into the ball fitting and tightness yeah. and their thinking and the engineering. Does this... So I go into the shops this afternoon. I want to get onto a Titleist ball and Titleist clubs and whatever it is. Is there a way that you, that works with the professionals, does it translate on the floor with the general public?
Yeah. So if you look at a fitting, and if you go to a doctor, okay. So going to a doctor, and if you want to, and this is something that I learned from John Dixon. He sees himself as a doctor, so. He charges a certain amount because of his knowledge. So he doesn't want to see tour professionals every day, okay? Because the tour professional is not sick.
Yeah.
He teaches a tour professional how to help himself, okay? So if John Dixon doesn't help you to help yourself, then what is he actually doing?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's his philosophy. He's like, if you're sick and you're struggling a little, then you come and see me. Okay, because that's what he does. Okay, so the same with me, and the same with Andrew Plund. So if you want to go see Andrew Plund, who is our fitting specialist in South Africa, you go and see him, and you book his time, and you take what you get, the information, but you book his time. So it will cost you a couple of rands, and I'll share that information with you, how you get your booking. But Andrew can fit from the golf ball all the way to the driver.
Shoes.
I would suggest you do it at one of your pro shops, okay. You know, or one of the guys who's got...
But use the knowledge we just shared with you and to approach that fitting with.
Yes. Yeah. So I would go if you...
You've empowered us now
yeah.
to actually go and be... And sit with it. Say, no, I want to understand this. I want to know about the foot, the medium size, the yeah. wider the foot. I want to understand all of that.
Exactly.
And they need to now almost insist that they have that type of engagement. And if there is anybody that feels like... Then they can obviously make contact with yes. Titleist and say, where do I go
where
and
do
get
I actually
a proper fitting?
Do it properly.
A proper fitting. Yeah.
Like yeah. A shoe fitting and all the pro shops who have all the different shoes with all the different sizes, and they normally carry a certain shoe and a medium and a certain and a core range and a wide, and they normally they call it a Brannock device. So the Brannock device is a device that you actually put your foot in, and your foot gets measured in width and in length. And then also different shoes like a Field or a Dry Joy Premier or a Pro SL, all of them have a slightly different fit, okay? So it's worth going to, you know, a pro shop like that where you can actually feel a couple of different shoes in your size, because they're all a little different. They were all designed for a different purpose. So you need to find what you want and the purpose and the right size, and then you're good to go.
But Rudy, I just want you to know you're going to sit in the seat again,
yeah,
because we need to talk more about it, because I want to get to a place where I'm saying, when I go for a fitting with Titleist, they're obviously going to tell me about the wonderful stuff about Titleist. Yeah. But what I'm trying to get to a place is to say that Titleist is actually the best at what they do, at everything that they do. So, and I know, especially Arthur, he has to keep an open mind into all of these things. But that's the idea that, you know, when I go to a Mercedes dealership, they're going to tell me how Mercedes is the best in the world. But if you as a consumer are knowledgeable and get the information, you can make a call to say, I actually understand based on technical information, based on reviews and history in the market, Mercedes is a better brand in that car than as an example, a BMW.
Yes.
Now I'm educated and informed to make that decision and guide myself towards that. And it's not the salesperson with a commission check burning my ear about all the wonderful things he wants to tell
me.
And the world is going towards that place. This has been incredible, Andrew. I mean, I'm sitting here and I thought to myself, how much am I going to learn from this? But I almost feel like I know nothing. I thought I was
information
so equipped.
Overload.
But interesting, and most importantly for me, a call to action. You can now take this information and make it a call to action. I want to understand a little bit more. But anyway, let's end it there. Rudy,
awesome.
What an
Thank
honor
so
and a privilege it's
no,
been.
That's awesome. Thank
Arthur,
you,
I can just imagine you sitting there. This is what you do every single day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It makes sense for you from start to finish.
Yes.
But I think this is one of the most informed ones when it comes to the general public.
Yes.
Because, Rudy, we always say, you guys look after the tours like magic. You know, that's in your DNA. We want to sort of look after the general golfers also a little bit. Because it feels like no one's fighting for their corner.
Yes,
and
exactly.
That's what this show is. And that's why we introduce or bring people like you in that we've heard this morning, 86% market share in amateur golf, 82% in professional golf. That is certainly not because you guys are great salesmen. Your product has to speak for itself.
On that note, I just want to put it out there is, if you are not playing what the guys who play for money, so if you're not using what those guys are using, why not?
Yeah.
Okay, that's all I want to add.
I agree with you completely.
On the next episode of the Human Golf Show.
So I've always been an ideas guy. So for those of you watching, you know, you've got hairlines like mine, used to look at the sprinkler heads for your distances, and then I put advertising on there and I patented it. So I've always had my mum was an artist, so I'll accredit her for a bit of creativity.